tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 448 of the Tsunami Escape podcast. I am C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
Crocodile was supposed to be here, but he is not showing up, so we're just going to have to move on without him tonight. We definitely have a lot to cover, so we did a short episode last week because we didn't want this one to be too overburdened.
Yeah, I'm glad we did, because this episode's going to be long enough, as is.
Yeah, exactly. We do have one news item. It's not a big one, but something we kind of expected, although I guess it's kind of early, but they did show the promo for the next season of Blue Exorcist called Beyond the Snow Saga, which is going to be airing this weekend.
Yeah, and with Daima ending, Blue Exorcist is basically now the second show in the block, right? Because it's going to go Bleach, and then Blue Exorcist, and then Mashal.
So, right. Mashal at one, then One Piece, and then it's reruns for the next three shows: Don to Don, Dragon Ball, and Naruto.
Yep. So we're going back to back with these Blue Exorcist seasons, right from season two into season three, right into season four. So that's kind of nice.
It's kind of cool. I mean, thinking back to when they first started re-airing the original series of Blue Exorcist, it's kind of interesting to think that that was the plan all along. You know, they were thinking that far ahead. So, yeah, I thought the promo looked pretty good. I will admit right now off the top of my head, I don't remember too much about it.
It seemed to be about, I wasn't super paying attention to, like, the dialogue about, like, they're in some snow place now. I'm not sure why. But it seems to revolve around Yukio, and I'm sure we'll talk about that when we talk about the episodes that aired last week. Because that, you know, that seems to be something that's kind of been boiling under the surface for that character since season two, really. And now coming to the forefront. And that seems to be, you know, the last episode of this season really tied into that. So, and also Shura's involved somehow. So,
yeah, it almost feels like I think there's a rescue thing with her. Like, we need to rescue her, which is surprising considering her character. But I think you're right. I think we're going to learn what the deal is with the blue eyes on him. I think that's probably what this is going to be about.
There was a part of the promo which seems kind of silly. So the blue eyes thing with Yukio seems to activate, or at least it activated the one time when his, like, life was threatened, like his, when he was in danger. So it appears that, like, based on what I saw on the promo, like, he throws himself off a building and he's like yelling to himself, Johnny Young Bosch, the voice actor, like, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. So it's like, did he literally throw himself off a building to, like, try to, like, put himself in danger, like literally mortal danger, to, like, activate his eyes? I don't know.
I guess we will find out soon. I mean, I think at this point it's safe to assume we're going to see all of this all the way to the final. Now, here's the thing I learned the other day. Blue Exorcist is still ongoing as a manga. Even though I know there's one more season after the blue snow thing or the snow thing, unless they, like, made another Gecko ending, I think that Blue Exorcist is still, like, hasn't finished yet.
Apparently it's a monthly manga, so it's just one of those mangas that just is slower than others. So it's been, you know, more than 10 years or whatever, and it's just still going.
Yeah. So I guess that final, finals are maybe the harsh word, but, like, that last season of the anime that has been made so far will be, you know, there isn't anything after that. I don't think that'll be the end of the story, technically. So,
yeah, I'm looking on the Wikipedia page. So the last episode, which we're, you know, 24 episodes away from still, so it'll be a while. But it only aired in Japan this past March, so less than a year ago. So, you know, that's relatively recent. As for the season, and I'm looking to see. I don't think there's been announced, like, a fifth season or anything like that. So right now that's where it ends.
Yeah, I think I brought that up because I think one of us asked that, like, or maybe it was Crocodile who'd asked, like, is the show is it over? Is at the end. And I think one of us speculated that we thought it was, but I was surprised to learn it is not. Also, another manga that still hasn't ended, although I think it might be about to, is Black Clover as well.
Now there's going to be a Black Clover movie.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I don't know about that.
There's a new season also coming.
Huh.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. Let me look. They call it like Black Clover season 2, which is sort of weird when you've already had like 100 whatever episodes. It is called Black Clover season 2. I don't know when it's coming out. I won't look into it any further here, but yeah, it's coming back in some way.
Interesting. I will say at this point, I think I've enjoyed Blue Exorcist a little more than Black Clover, even though Black Clover was like more humorous. And like, there are like definitely a couple of characters in Black Clover that made me chuckle. I think Blue Exorcist overall has been a better show, like a better story.
Yeah. And Black Clover, it got better as it approached the end, both in story and in like production. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was that chunk in like the middle of that series, or really maybe like in the first third or so, where it was honestly pretty bad, and it kind of had to like dig yeah. itself out of that grave, and it kind of slowly did. But yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, we've got a long show, so let's get into it. We're going to start out the show with the season. They call it the season finale, but of course it's the series finale of Dragon Ball Daima. Dragon Ball Daima episode 20, Maximum. Like I said, I was thinking about this because, you know, they always say it's like the season finale of Daima. I guess we don't know. They could always make a second season of Daima. I just don't think there's any plans to, especially the way this season ended felt very, like the credits and everything, very final. But
yeah, and I'm not a huge Dragon Ball fan, so I don't have all the context here, but I think Daima kind of started out as more of like a webisode type project and kind of evolved into like a TV anime. Something like that.
I didn't know that.
So but they did announce that there's going to be like a Dragon Ball announcement in like January. And of course people are like Super Season 2 or Dragon Ball Next or whatever they're gonna call it. So won't be too long before we maybe get news of another series.
Yeah. I guess it would be the first one. I wouldn't say the first one. It would be because there was GT, but I was going to say Toriyama obviously won't be involved. So I guess we'll see, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a make it or break it thing. It could be, but let me quickly go over what happened in this episode. There's not a lot, but worth mentioning. So everything up until the first commercial break is all just the fight with Goku and Goma. And really the only thing I really mentioned about this in my notes is that along with the animation looking really, really good, it was also a really high frame rate animation, which was surprising. There was a lot of really like, they weren't animating on twos or anything like that. It was like super fluid and smooth. They're really pulling out all the stops on this animation.
Yeah, they just went all out for the final episode, which you kind of expect them to, but even so, it was impressive.
Yeah, it's I think I've said it before, but like this looks too good to be TV anime. This looks like a movie. And the only thing that really ends up happening that I remember, because I kind of looked away for a second and I look back, we were almost already on the commercial break, was that Goku just put a big hole in Goma, like just blasted him.
Yeah, so he did like a big Kamehameha, which, you know, we've seen before, obviously, but like, this time he blasts the Kamehameha through Goma, and it goes like through like the three demon worlds.
I didn't see like, that.
It puts holes like in the sky, and it even showed like a scene where like there's literally like a hole in the sky because it's like connected to the other demon world, and how that works like logistically, I don't know. But then it started showing like water coming out. Kind of weird, kind of fun, weird imagery where there's like a waterfall in the sky because there's a hole in it. And this actually does come into play later. like Goku like left a lasting impact on the demon realm with this big hole in the sky. Yeah, that was basically the first half of this episode.
Right. So when we come back from the commercial break, Piccolo is able to get in those, or he tries to get in those three hits to the back of the head that's going to, you know, knock the eye out. But unfortunately, he only gets in two, and then Goma stops him and grabs him. And it looks like things are going to be really bad because he's on to the whole, you know, what's going on. Arinsu says, get the book, Ku, and let's look and see if there's some other solution. And Ku's got the book in his hand. However, rather than look anything up, he just goes up to behind Goma with the book and just hits him with the book three times. And it works. Yep. And it's almost kind of, I mean, I didn't bother me, but it's almost super anticlimactic because he doesn't even, like, it was, there was no buildup to it. He just does it and it works. And Goma, the eyeball pops out and Goma deflates and he loses.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. He is beat. It was that simple.
I was kind of wondering why. So there's this, in the first half of the episode, there's a big like beam struggle between Goku and Goma. And I know you could argue it's maybe dangerous, but like, I feel like that would have been an ideal time for Piccolo to hit Goma in the back of the head.
Yeah.
Three times. Like, yeah, you risk, like, what if you get hit with a beam? But, you know, if you're quick enough and careful enough, I think you could fly up there, hit him three times while he's like, his body is in the way and he's occupied. obviously, that wouldn't be a fun, you know, episode or whatever.
I don't know. I mean, that's what I thought they were going to do.
Yeah, it just kind of felt like that's what I thought they were going to do. But no, I guess that wouldn't let Ku get the final hit, I suppose.
Yeah. The eyeball kind of falls down onto the ground and Glorio just walks up to it and he just smashes it with his foot. He squishes it. It's that easy to defeat too. Just very unceremoniously, to the point where even some of the characters are like, what? That's it? That's all it takes?
Yeah.
Then Marba, remember Marba? She shows up and she and Arinsu are like, oh, okay, we've got the little Goma guy here. We need to, you know, capture them. And then I guess Marba has this like bottle, kind of like a genie bottle, and then traps both Goma and Degasu inside the bottle. And that's their plan for them. They're like, we're going to store them away so they can't ever cause any more trouble.
Yeah. And this is, I forget what this is called, this pot that like seals them. It's from Dragon Ball.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this was a thing before. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just gonna Google Dragon Ball pot and see if I find it. What's it called? Like
bottle or something.
Yeah, like Dragon Ball fans are probably yelling at me right now. I just forget what it's called. Evil containment wave is what it is.
Oh, okay, that does sound familiar.
Yep, I'll just link it here. So I saw some people in the thread mentioning like, oh, she can do that too, because And it had like a similar sort of animation where they're as the two characters are getting sucked into the pot, their character model or their character animation gets like outlined and smeary and whatnot as they're getting stretched in. So kind of it was very obviously a throwback to that, like a reference.
Okay. So. I do kind of remember that now. Yeah. That I see this picture. So everybody's kind of standing around. They're like, okay, well, now who gets to be the king? Who's going to be the king? And a couple people are like, you know, oh, Goku, you can be the king. And Goku's like, nah, I don't want to be the king. I'm leaving. And then I think Arinsu says, well, the king, the person who should be king should be the person who defeated Goma. And that turns out to be Ku.
Yep.
And yeah, Ku is going to be the king. And it's like, kind of cool. I mean, like everybody's cool with it. And he's cool with it. I'll tell you what, I did not expect this character to turn out this way. He's, I don't know.
So it's, yeah. So when this character was first introduced, you know, he was supposed to be like stronger than Majin Buu or whatever. And like, he's going to be a big, you know, foe for Goku to overcome. And then he like can't beat the Tamagami or whatever. But it kind of slowly clues us in that he's actually like really smart instead.
Yeah.
First, you know, just somehow, like, he's smarter than most Majins, especially including Boo and Doo. And this actually kind of plays a role here where he's like actually like intelligent enough to be a leader. And he doesn't really come across like he doesn't have like poor evil ambitions. Like he's not, you know, he doesn't have malicious intent. He doesn't have any wrong reason to be in charge. He just seems like he's competent and capable. And it's like, out of all the people here, he actually seems like an appropriate pick, even though he was born like a week ago.
Yeah, I think some of the characters even say as much. And yeah, I mean, he's like actually a nice guy. And that's kind of the thing you take away from him. He's like the opposite of what I thought he was going to be, to the point where he's like, you know, we're going to build a better demon world where, you know, there's not this equality and everything. And so I'm just going to start naming everybody to be my ministers. And everybody gets to be a minister, basically.
Including Pansy's dad.
Yeah.
And he's like, and Pansy Dad in his Brooklyn accent, I'm not going to try it, is like, what, even me? But I'm just from the third demon world.
So he's like, it's cool. And I think he like, you know, Dew is going to be the minister of chocolate or some shit, you know, and everybody gets, you know, Arinsu's going to be his like, what did he call her? Like second in command or something like that.
Like lieutenant or something. But
yeah, it's just it looks like the... funny enough, I think the demon realm is going to be in good hands with this guy, which is kind of surprising. So everybody kind of, you know, gets onto a new airplane and they're going to take the Z fighters home. And, you know, Glorio's piloting and, you know, I think Pansy and everybody else is going along with them. I think, you know, obviously Arinsu and Ku and Du are staying behind, but whatever. But all the Z fighters, Glorio and the little girl, Pansy. They all get in the airplane and take off. And then we get the credit sequence, which I did want to talk briefly about, which was really nice. It was just like still images on one side of the screen with the credits on the other, but they were like images of the people all turning back to normal. And so you see like the people back on Earth getting reverted back to normal. To their normal ages. I like the one where like Chi-Chi like is surprised to find that she's back to normal. And she's like standing on top of like a step ladder because she was doing the dishes and she couldn't reach the counter and stuff like that. It's really nice.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was cute.
Yeah. And I felt like it was very like, I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it was very like, it was done in a way that felt like it was honoring like Toriyama to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But that's not all. After the credits, we cut back to the airplane and Goku's like, hey, can we stop by that shop that sells those Medibugs? I want to get some more of those. We're running low on Sensu beans back on Earth. And they're like, sure. So they pull in and they start, you know, to go get the Medibugs. I think Bulma is like, ew, bugs. But then like the woman there is like, yeah, but these things will make your skin 10 years younger. And then she's suddenly like all interested. She's like, oh, really? These are great.
Yep.
And then the big twist comes when Pansy walks around the corner and is like in total shock. She's like, oh my gosh. And then everybody else walks over and like, oh my gosh. And it turns out the third eye, the Oculus thing, they sell those here. They got like two more of them just sitting there.
Yep.
That's the joke.
I feel like Goku should have taken one.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that would have been smart, I think.
Like, he could have used that against Beerus. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. I think the woman who runs the shop or whatever was like, yeah, we had three of those, but, you know, we lost one day and I could never find it. We still got those last two there.
And she says it outright, too, where she's like, just buy one of these and even you will have infinite wells of untapped power. Like, okay, like she knows what they are.
It is very, it's very funny. Like, it's very like supposed to be like goofy, a gag, like, to the point where they even end the show with like this image. I don't even know what it says. It says something in Japanese, but it was probably like thank you for watching or something like that. But it was
I think you mentioned this in the thread also. The animation during the sequence is actually really good too.
Oh my god, wasn't it?
Yeah, like even just like Bulma like reacting to like the bugs and then like getting excited about also the bugs and, you know, just like the character movement and motions and things in this scene Even just like the shopkeeper just kind of rummaging around, just like, wow, they were like, this little epilogue scene, they put a lot of effort into this.
I mean, I want to reinstate what you're just saying, because it was like shockingly good looking. Yeah. Like, it was a joy to watch. Like you said, like just like the little shots of like Bulma leaning forward, looking at the bug and then being disgusted and kind of flowing her arms around and stuff. And it's like, not only is it super fluid, but it looks like somebody really took a lot of time to make it look really fun. And like, it just looks so good. It's like, man, what a great way to end the show. It just looks so good.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think you should think about it too seriously in terms of the gag at the end, but it's just kind of a fun, goofy ending. You know, I'll take it.
Well, I think that's the point, is that it's supposed to end on a joke, right? Because, again, like, it's kind of playing homage to the late author of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, it kind of brings back the more like the goofy whimsy of early Dragon Ball.
Exactly.
In a way. After being very, very much a Dragon Ball Z fight.
So. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, Dragon Ball is known for its battles and its powerful warriors and stuff like that. But it started out as a gag comic. And, you know, that's, you know, paying homage to that, I think, was very appropriate. And that's the show. It is finished.
And one last thing. You might have mentioned this, but about Goku putting a hole in the sky. They even mention one of the demons and kind of mentions like, wow, you've been now in the third demon world because of what you did, Goku, put a hole in the sky. Like all that like heavy air is like not there anymore. So it's just kind of like that hole in the sky actually makes things better for us. Thank you for that.
Everyone can fly around easier now. Yeah. He didn't just help defeat Goma. He helped improve the quality of life for all Majin. So. Very cool. All right, well, I guess it's time to rate and rank this show. I'm going to post a link here to the current ranking. So this is probably the first time we've ever ranked something, and it's just me and you, so we're just going to have to go with this, I guess.
Okay, so just kind of looking at the list here, obviously the first thing I'm curious about is, where's Dragon Ball Z Kai and where's Dragon Ball Super? Right now, Dragon Ball Z Kai is at 35. And Dragon Ball Super is at 52. I know Super was kind of weighed down heavily from those like first two arcs that were like like movie, like basically like stretched out movie arcs that are just like kind of worse in every way. And then, you know, like the final like battle of Jiren and stuff, I know was sometimes criticized just for pacing and, you know, it uneven production here and there and things like that. I know that, though. I remember those brought Super down. And then Kai, you know, Dragon Ball Z Kai, it's Dragon Ball. And, you know, I think everyone knows what Dragon Ball is good for, or good, what it's known for, and what it's maybe weaker at. It's there. Kind of just thinking out loud. I don't have a number yet. But, like, in some ways, I kind of like Daima as being, you know, just, it's kind of a weird comparison to these shows, because both of these shows are, like, 120 episodes long, at least. Whereas Daima is just 20 episodes and it's just kind of in and out. It's a more concise little narrative, kind of a like a bite-sized Dragon Ball show.
Yeah.
Unlike these ones. I think in terms of production quality, it's like obviously better than both of these. Like, I think that's not unquestionable. Sure, Super and Kai both have good-looking episodes. Kai is probably more consistent than Super. Kai's got a very consistent art style. Obviously it's like 30 years old now or more. But in terms of just pure production quality, I think Daima has them beat. 20 episode show probably helps on that front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the lore stuff was fun in terms of like learning about Majins, you know, and demons, and they've always existed in Dragon Ball, but
and
now
we're getting
a little bit more interest in them. Yeah, Namekians. The front half of the show being a little bit more of that Dragon Ball flavor, kind of more adventure-y stuff. that was fun. You know, it wasn't just power levels the whole time. It kind of got to that at the end, but the fact that it wasn't that all the time, I appreciate. What was it? There was that episode with that where they go, they're in that like cave and they're camping, and that like bull monster Minotaur kind of like threatens them, and that was kind of just like, that felt like just a fun, goofy, just enjoyable episode that like you wouldn't find that in Dragon Ball Super, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. So it's a weird comparison to compare to like these other shows, because it's so different in terms of just its length, which affects its production, which affects its tone, and affects.
Trying not to think too much about the length of it. I think I'm thinking more like, okay, if I compared it to the two Dragon Ball shows on this list, obviously better than Super, I think in every way. Like, Super isn't like a terrible show. That's why it's at like 50 something out of 100 almost. But it's not nowhere near as good as this, as far as like quality and compellingness of the story and stuff like that. I mean, the story in this is not super deep either, but like, it was interesting to learn things. We learned things in Super about like the Super universe and everything. That was kind of neat, but I think overall I enjoyed the adventure level stuff in this more. Now, comparing it to Kai is a little more difficult for me, because I mean, obviously this is way better made than Kai, but I think Kai is also a kind of a classic, and I don't want to like poo-poo on Kai too much, because I do think that like Dragon Ball Z is like seminal anime,
right? Like I think that's unquestionable. How many things have been inspired by Dragon Ball Z is like numerous. It's hard for me not now. I'm starting to think numbers. I think it would be hard for me to place Daima above Kai. I think that would be difficult.
I think it's difficult if only because of like how important Dragon Ball Z has been to all of anime. And there are, I mean, like even setting its like, you know, vaulted amazing pedigree aside, like generally, like just being like hyped by Dragon Ball Z, like just the fights with these enemies, like it was exciting. It was great. It was a good show. I mean, it has the production values, which aren't terrible. They were of their time.
Yeah. Dragon Ball Z Kai looks pretty good throughout. It doesn't have like the big Sakuga moments that you see modern days. It has some really good looking episodes for, you know, the 90s.
Yeah.
And I know Kai came out a little later, but from the 90s originally. Yeah. And like you said, like, I think Kai, like villains like Frieza and the androids and Cell and Buu, to maybe a lesser extent, are like really classic villains. And those, I think villains are stronger than Goma. Goma was powerful, but wasn't, you know, if I'm thinking who are the coolest and the most interesting and the most charismatic, compelling Dragon Ball villains, I'm not thinking Goma. Sorry.
Right. Goma feels like a movie villain.
Yeah. Like he's like dangerous, but not necessarily like threatening in a way.
No,
You know,
I thought they were going to go more comedic with his final battle, and they really didn't. They took it more seriously than I expected, which I think is to the detriment. So
yeah, so there's like a certain level of like pathos when you have like Goku versus Frieza, or even Trunks versus the androids and things like that. You know, Goma, and even in Super, like Jiren had a little bit more to him, I think, than Goma. Sort of. But yeah, I think that's probably a big weakness, is that Goma is just kind of there. He's dangerous, and you know, I'm not going to say he wasn't threatening, and he had some agency, but he's like, he's just not, the fact that he got all of his power from like this artifact. And, you know, he was kind of had a pretty boring, like, motive. Just like, I want to be the king because that gives me power. I don't know. He's just not that cool. Not that interesting.
No. And I mean, Crocodile kind of said it too before, that like the fight with, as amazing as it looks, and it did look really amazing, the problem with the Goma fight is that he's just like, with the eye, he's just unbeatable. And it's like, it's just sort of broken, and not in a satisfying way. Like he just like it wasn't earned his ability. It just sort of just get, he just got it and it just happened. And everyone's trying really, really hard to beat him. And they're just not. I mean, they never technically beat him. They just found a loophole.
Yep.
And that is kind of not satisfying from a villain because I don't know. He just wasn't, he was obviously never going to lose unless they knocked the eye out of him. So, So anyway, I agree with you that I don't feel comfortable putting this show above Kai, even though honestly, I would rather rewatch this show than I would watch all of Kai again. But then again, I mean, Kai's so many episodes, right? And, I would watch clips from Kai, but, I don't know. This show's, I like this show, I think, more than a lot of people might like it for the reasons that you said, where it was more about the journey and the adventure and the exploration and fights. They kind of didn't really have a whole lot of fights, but when they were few and far between and they were really well done, with the exception of the actual motive of the final fight, where that was just sort of like them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just, he was just too strong, I think, But I don't know. The other fights in the show were pretty good, like where it felt like who they were fighting was taking damage. And it was like, oh, okay, this is going back and forth and stuff. So, yeah, when I put my number in, it's not going to be as high as 35, I don't think. And the question is, I'm not sure where I'm going to put it after that. So let me look here.
I think I have my number.
Yeah. I think I do too. This may be surprising, but I'm going to go ahead and type my number in.
I'm ready.
You're ready? Okay. Let's go. 3, 2, 1, go. All right. So you did have it a bit higher than me. I kind of thought you might. Seda had it at 37, which is where My Hero Academia was currently. It was really just like two below Dragon Ball Z Kai, below Kill la Kill and above My Hero. I had it at 48, which is where Invincible Fight Girl was. It's just below Eureka 7, but above, would be above Invincible Fight Girl. Go ahead and give me your reasoning here.
So I think my reasoning was I saw the trio of One Punch Man, The Promised Neverland, and Lupin the Third Part 6. And all three of those shows, I think this is sort of intentional on our part, like all three of those shows, One Punch Man, Promised Neverland and Lupin the Third Part 6. Those shows have like a great half or a phenomenal half in the case of like Promised Neverland or even One Punch Man, and then like a really bad half. And so they're like kind of like this really mixed bag where you have like really, really good versus really, really bad, like One Punch Man season 2, Promised Neverland season 2. And I remember Lupin the Third Part 6, one of the stories with like, what was it? The other detective was kind of weird. But then like the Lupin backstory, half of it, Sherlock Holmes, right. Then the other half of it was like much, much more interesting to me. So I was just kind of thinking Daima, I think doesn't have that problem. Obviously it's only one, like half maybe, but like it doesn't have this mixed bag problem. So I was thinking, probably above those three because of that reason, it's a more consistent show. It doesn't, you could argue, and I accept that it doesn't reach the heights of like Promised Neverland season 1, One Punch Man season 1, and things like that. And so I was kind of looking at that, like, that group of shows above it, which is like Big O, My Hero Academia, Assassination Classroom. And I kind of felt like, all those shows are shows I like with some like caveats. Like there are parts of My Hero that I really like, and there are parts that I think that it kind of drags at. And then I saw Kill la Kill there, and I think Kill la Kill is an overall better show. So I just kind of stuck it at 37 right there. So yeah, my floor that I wasn't going to go lower was those three shows I mentioned with like the half and half.
All right. Well, my reasoning was a little more basic than that. I was just looking at those shows, and I think I kind of fell into that thing you kind of hinted at. It's like first season of Promised Neverland. I know the show is brought down by its second season, which it's funny. I see a lot of these like tier lists showing up in my Reddit feeds where it's like people are posting their anime tier lists. And a lot of people will have like Promised Neverland in their like, you know, must watch. And then they'll have Promised Neverland in their worst ever, you know, the same person. because it's because I really honestly will tell people, like, not that I have a lot of opportunities to, but like if I had to, I would tell people, watch the first season of Promised Neverland. It's almost a perfect season of anime. Like, it's just perfect. And then don't watch anything after that because it's terrible.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our listing kind of has, the way we've done it, kind of has to like incorporate the second season.
Right.
But there's such a disparity that I fully get what you're saying. I would say it too. And how people rank them, they just decide to like rank them to separate them. Like, yeah. Season one, excellent. Season two, just forget it exists.
Yeah. I guess I need to keep that in mind. But like, if I didn't take that in mind, I would be like, Promised Neverland, I think it's a better show than this. I even think to a certain extent that like One Piece in some respects is a better show than this, more for the story, not for the production, because obviously One Piece has got terrible production values, but like story-wise, I don't know. I'm more invested in One Piece, what it's got going on in its world.
Oh, for sure. Remind me, when we ranked One Piece, was that after it like unceremoniously left in the middle of, or what was it after?
No, I think it was after that. I don't remember the details. I think we were in Dressrosa when we ranked it again, because it was like the beginning of this year.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. We did that re-ranking. So
we did a re-ranking in like January. So it would have been, I think, in Dressrosa
halfway
at the time.
Through Dressrosa. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Why?
No, I was just wondering. I'm actually trying to remember when One Piece was like kicked off the block several years ago before it came back. Where was it? It was like, it was before Marineford. It was before Impel Down, somewhere in there. It was, I remember it was before that because I had to like watch that by myself.
So did it go down? I assume.
No, I think it went up. I think it
went up. Okay, I don't remember.
Well, because I don't. Yeah, it's kind of weird because we had to include. I don't. I think when we ranked it, it's such a weird situation because it like skipped two arcs in the middle of it. It skipped.
Mm-hmm.
Did
a
we
good arc too?
Did we watch Sabaody?
Was that no? That's the thing. We didn't. So, no.
Yeah,
no.
That's a great arc.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, it's a One Piece is weird. I think we're just kind of like rank it how you want. We'll just condense it and average it. Anyways.
So I was kind of thinking like, I don't know if I could put this above the heights of Promised Neverland, the heights of first season One Punch Man, but. Maybe I should. I mean, I'm definitely going to move it up. I mean, it's got to move up higher. I think you've made a pretty strong case for me. I don't know. Is it? Yeah, I don't know. Assassination Classroom, I don't think I like as much as this show, but it was all right.
Assassination Classroom and My Hero Academia are shows that I think are good shows, but not great shows, which, you know, I guess it's fair when they're in the 30s. So it's kind of like, they're also a lot longer. I mean, Assassination Classroom is what, 50 episodes total, something like that. Two seasons. Yeah.
The one thing I want to be careful of here, and not that it's like, this is, none of this matters, but at the end of the day, I wonder if like, this feels like we're going to have recency bias on this show. Cause I think we really, really liked it, but I don't know. What do you feel?
Yeah, will we try to preempt recency bias? Like, will we sour on it in 3 months?
Yeah, will we look back and be like, oh, that was a great show? Or are we going to look back and be like, that's all right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of feel pretty strong about it right now. I think just quality-wise, I overall enjoyed it. I just think that, like, will it have the staying power of, like, some of these other shows nearby it. I mean, I think it's better than this is a weird list, of course. I think it's better than Assassination Classroom, but it's definitely not better than the first season of Promised Neverland. And that's where I'm starting to like struggle a little bit. My Hero's real hit and miss. I'd be okay with putting this above My Hero, but I think also a lot of people would scoff at that.
My personal issue with My Hero Academia is I kind of liked like the first two seasons of it, but then I feel like it kind of got like stuck in a rut. And like didn't get out of it. And if like, I don't know, it felt like seasons 3, 4, 5. I even lost count. Like, what season are we on? Like, what season have we seen? They kind of all blur together to me because it just kind of felt like it just got stuck.
Well, it's the same issue we had with Shippuden. It really is. It's exactly the same thing. It's lost the fun of the show. And then now it's all just dreary and depressing. And it's like, I'm not invested in that as like I was when it was a fun, like superhero high school thing. At least that's my take.
Yeah. Anyway, so if we bump it down from mine or bump it up from your initial like vote, so we're now looking at roughly around 40, 40 to 43, right in there.
Yeah.
I think this is almost an exact average. We could put it at like 43. And that's basically what I was thinking. Say the highs of One Punch Man and Promised Neverland, basically the first seasons of those, kind of they supersede their poor second halves, and it's like good enough to outrank Daima, which doesn't reach those highs.
I agree. I think Daima was a well-made show, but it didn't have anything super amazing about it, other than the animation, which was really good. But then again, One Punch Man had that too. So. And Promise Neverland to a certain extent. So yeah, I think let's put it at 43. It'll take the place of Lupin the Third Part 4. And I feel good with that. So this, let me go ahead and insert this.
Hopefully your list keeps numbered. It did. Okay.
I think it did. Yeah. So this will be Dragon Ball Daima. The new number 43. So just below The Promised Neverland and just above Lupin the Third Part 4. Yeah, that feels fine.
Yep.
I do feel like we're going to look back at this and maybe feel like the show wasn't as good as we think it was. But I certainly feel strong about it right now because I think I don't want to like understate how well the production values in this show were and how like generally fun it was to watch. Like I found it, I mean, I think I said this before, but like it was more fun for me to watch than Super. Even though I didn't mind Super, Super was more about Dragon Ball Z fights and power levels and stuff like that. And this was more like, let's have fun exploring a crazy, wacky world and with a bunch of new characters. And yeah, I like that more.
Yeah, it was kind of refreshing in that regard.
Cool. All right.
Oh, I think you misspelled it.
Oh, did I? Oh, the Daima part. D-A-I-M-A. Yeah, and they always put it in all caps for some reason, so that's why I do that.
Yeah, I know. Yep, that's what I do for some reason. And Daima is a made-up word. I remember we talked about that.
Yeah, it's in the song, in the opening song. But I think you're right. It just means like demon world or something. Okay. Well, there we go. That is Dragon Ball Daima. I think a welcome addition to the Toonami lineup. I think it was a smart move on the programming block to add that show to the block because obviously it's Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball is very closely tied to the history of Toonami. So good show.
So I just Googled like Dragon Ball announcement 2026 just to like remind myself there's an event in January where they're going to announce a few things, including a new game, like a video game. Mm. And it's just so funny when I just Googled Dragon Ball and I remember this when I was in high school or middle school. Like I still find like weird, like fan art, fake announcements. Like, look at this new Goku. And it's like clearly not a real thing. Like I remember that when I was a kid, you know, people making fake rumors or whatever. But anyways, my point is that, you know, in a couple of months, there might be something new to look forward to.
Maybe even for Toonami. We'll find out, I guess. Oh, by the way, one quick thing I want to mention here, because just so I don't forget it, there was some news recently because we were talking about rankings and I mentioned One Piece earlier. Well, you know what? Actually, I'll save this for One Piece because we're going to talk about that show. All right. I'll save it for then. All right. Well, let's move on. The next show on the block we're going to talk about, of course, is Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Core 2, Episode 10, Marching Out the Zombies 2. Guess they couldn't come up with a clever name for this episode, so they just used the same one twice. But it is exactly that. We are going to have more zombie stuff. So let's go through it real quick. The episode starts out with Hitsugaya basically owning everyone. Like, he just defeats everybody. He's strong. He's also got, like, tan skin, which comes up.
All the zombies have darker skin for some reason.
Yeah,
I think they're zombies.
Yeah, they have a. I'm not going to do it justice, but there's an explanation for that they mention. It has something to do with their blood. But anyway, Mayuri, who is the mask guy, the scientist guy, he says he wants to experiment on Hitsugaya. And Hitsugaya starts attacking Mayuri. He goes to cut him. He cuts down Mayuri. And then suddenly we see the same scene we did from a moment ago. And Hitsugaya's like, wait, what happened? And then he does it again. And then boom, time loop. And this keeps happening over and over. And Mayuri kind of lets him know. He's like, oh, well, see, I gave you this special drug. And this drug causes you to experience the same events over and over and over until something.
I think it's specifically until Mayuri gets killed. So, or it's, no, sorry, I misspoke. It basically, he even says, like, the conundrum here is, if you kill me, if Hitsugaya kills Mayuri, then the loop initiates.
Right.
If you don't kill me, then you're fine, but that means you can never kill me. So
you're
like,
stuck in a loop.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he says also, but there's another side effect to this drug that I developed. Unfortunately, every time you go through the loop, it gets worse and worse for you, and you start to become like very sick or something.
But yeah, it's like after 10 loops, your brain kind of like starts to fail.
Yeah. And this is when more zombie captains show up. So I don't even know who these guys are, but they're more Soul Reaper captains in zombie form.
So I made a joke last week that this felt like the fourth Great Ninja War, which is basically like the end of Shippuden, where it's just like just a bunch of zombies. And I was not expecting that to happen here, and just kind of like, oh, we have zombie Soul Reapers, we have zombie Arrancars from like a million years ago, and let's not even try to discuss how death and life works in this world, because they're all dead. Or at least some sort of afterlife. And this episode did kind of drag a bit, because it kind of felt like it's literally marching out the zombies too. Like this is now the second episode of this zombie stuff. And it's sure, it kind of feels like we're just filling time.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I agree with that. I think this episode too, also, that's about where we get to the commercial break. But before I continue, I just want to say this whole episode is basically mostly is just about Mayuri kind of doing Mayuri stuff, which I think some people in the thread were like, they're not fans of this. I actually didn't mind it too much. I think this character is kind of interesting in his like super cockiness, even especially considering that he is somewhat competent. I mean, he's actually more than a little competent. It's like scientist versus zombie puppeteer is what's going on here.
Yeah, and someone in the thread and kind of joked, but it almost feels true that like Kubo must love this character, because he always does these sorts of things, and it does have that kind of weird, somewhat compelling mix of like mad scientist, but not really evil, but still kind of mad.
Yeah, this guy's obviously walks a very thin line between good guy and bad guy for sure. He's like the House, the Dr. House, where he's like, he's always going to solve your problem, but he doesn't do it ethically. Anyway, we come back from the commercial break and we cut over and we see Byakuya is defeating a couple of other of these Stern Ritters. He defeats Candace Catnip, and he also defeats another Stern Ritter called Robert.
The guy with the gun.
Yeah. And those guys kind of get taken down pretty quickly. But then someone else shows up. It's Stern Ritter L, known as Pepe the Love, who is basically a Stern Ritter who is like a big guy who is like basically like Cupid.
Yeah, he definitely feels like a take on Cupid.
Yeah, especially considering he's like half naked and he's just wearing like a kind of diaper thing. And well, I'm not even going to mention it. Let's just say that he's endowed and he's a big guy. And he basically does the exact same hand thing that that one woman from One Piece does. Oh God, what's her name? The snake woman that's in love with Luffy.
Boa
Hancock. Yeah. He does the exact same motion where he does a little love symbol with his hands and it sends out a beam. It's the same thing. Except instead of turning them to stone, it makes them, they basically fall in love with him and then they'll do his bidding. So it's just another form of zombie where he's basically controlling people with love. So yeah, Byakuya and Love Guy are kind of having a battle back and forth. My next, I'm not reading ahead here. So Mayuri has a drug that turns Gigi zombies into his zombies. So this is a big twist in the episode. Gigi thought she had the upper hand because she's got a bunch more zombies now. But it turns out Mayuri is a step ahead of her because he's got a drug that can convert her zombies into his. And they won't do her bidding anymore. They're doing his. He's just, again, always a step ahead of everyone. And while this is happening, I think the Sternritter L guy shows up as well and starts trying to fight in during this battle.
Yep.
But I think Mayuri or somebody ends up like knocking the L guy back, just like into a wall.
Yeah, I kind of forget what happened there.
Yeah, it's not super important. Basically, Mayuri doesn't lose. Gigi's not doing great, although I don't think she's like in trouble right now. I don't think she's been defeated, but she's losing. And Pepe the Love has been defeated, or to a certain extent knocked back and defeated. And that's when Glutton shows up, the kind of monotone girl, and she walks up and she's like,
she's going to eat him, I guess.
She's going to eat him. She's like, oh, you're pathetic. And then she does her weird mouth thing. And then, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's getting revenge on him because Pepe had turned, during the battle, had turned her and another one of the Sternritter women against, like, controlled them, were taken over their bodies. And she was not happy about that. So she kills him. And then that's when we get the credits. But we do get a very quick, brief post-credit scene. And it is Yuhabaha has now arrived in the, whatever that place is called.
The Soul Castle or whatever.
Yeah, the Soul King's Castle. Yeah, yeah, he's there now. And he is ready to attack.
One of the Squad Zero women is there, I think. And they have like an army of, there's like an army of like, I guess, castle guards. They're not court guards, they're castle guards, I guess. Versus like the Sternritter army, you know, just a bunch of nameless mooks, but like there's going to be a battle up there now. Obviously Ichigo, Rukia, and, or maybe not Rukia, Ichigo or Hime, and Chad. Or like follow them up. So, but yeah, that seems to be where the next battle is going to take place, even though they're still fighting, you know, in the court guard. One small thing, I did recognize that Mayuri does call Gigi zombie girl. And like, I made a joke that like, oh, Mayuri will, you know, refer to her as her preferred gender. So she's clearly he's a more empathetic human being than Yumi Chika, who didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not being totally serious, but sort of serious.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I don't really, unless the show had told me, I wouldn't have known. One way or the other. And I kind of think, I mean, I don't have any reason not to think of her that way. So,
by the way, the voice actor for Gigi is Casey Mungo. I might be mispronouncing that, but they're an actor who actually identifies as non-binary. And that feels appropriate. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. It was last week or the week before somebody mentioned, maybe it was Crocodile, that like Gigi's like a fan favorite character. And I'm kind of getting it. Like, I get it. Like, seems like she's fun. And I like her face. The way her face is drawn. Did you notice too that she kind of looks a bit like a cockroach with her like strands of hair that come out the top? They look like big antenna.
I noticed that. I didn't know what you meant by cockroach at first. And like, cockroach. Oh yeah, but they do look like antennae.
Yeah. They kind of look like big antenna coming off the top of her head. But anyway, I don't know. I like her design and I like her, like her disposition. And I really am curious to see. I mean, if she's a fan favorite, it makes me wonder how much longer she's going to be around. But anyway, she's not out of it yet, I guess. And I will say, as far as the Mayuri stuff, like, again, I don't mind it because even though he's annoying, he's supposed to be. And I feel like Kubo's doing exactly what he wants with this character and delivering exactly the response out of the audience that he wants from this character. Cause I find him frustrating to watch to a certain extent because he's always so cocky, but I don't know. I kind of like the idea of like the super smart guy trying to outmaneuver the other person. And that's what this guy does. So, and that is Bleach. Anything else?
Nope. We're getting close to the end of Core 2. I forget if it's 12 or 13 episodes, but.
Oh, God, I keep forgetting. I will tell you this, Bleach has kind of flown by.
Yeah, I think so. If you include the first core, I think we're on episode like 24 or 23.
Yeah.
So
let's move on. This week, of course, we're going to have double Blue Exorcist to finish out the Shimane Illuminati arc. So let's begin with the next episode of Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist, the Shimane Illuminati Saga, Episode 11, Pink Spider. I'm going to tell you right now, I have no idea why it's called that.
Well, pink makes me think Shima, but spider is like, is that supposed to be like a metaphor?
Yeah, it must be. He's a spider, like, that must be.
I don't really think of like spies or, you know, secret agents as, or whatever you want to call them, as a spider, though.
Is it supposed to be like a pun? Thing? Like spider, spy, spy spider? No. I don't know. Anyway, you're right. He is pink haired, so that must be him. So quick rundown. Renzo was a double agent. We were debating. I was curious for a long time. Are they going to pull a double agent? Are they going to pull like he's just a bad guy? Nope. Double agent. He was hired by Mephisto to infiltrate the Illuminati. And turns out some of the bad things he did in this arc, he had to do in order to keep his cover, I guess. Do you think he's redeemed?
No. And we'll get into it, but it's a little bit more than just double agent.
True. Yeah. I think that's what saves this a little bit, because if it had just been double agent and everybody was cool with it, I think that would have been kind of cheesy.
That would have been kind of boring.
Oh, yeah. But I think they do something a little better with it here. So anyway, we cut over to the what's called the Dominus Liminus. And it is basically the Avengers helicarrier. The Illuminati has their own Avengers helicarrier. We cut into this scene and we see that Renzo has brought Gedoin back to the Illuminati, and specifically to Lucifer. And, you know, Gedoin's all Gedoin-ish, being, a slobbering idiot and, you know, super remorseful and everything. And basically all you need to know is that Lucifer walks up to him and he's like, "You're worthless to me," and disintegrates him, which is very rewarding. We never have to deal with that character again. Thank God.
Yeah. I'm glad he didn't stick around as a naked half man, half slug.
Yeah.
Whatever he turned into.
I have to listen to all his crap. He was a really bad guy. Like, I did not like him. But it's not so much that Lucifer kills him so much because he failed, although that is part of it. He also kills him because he just doesn't care about humans. Lucifer basically kind of says as much. He's like, "You're just a human. I don't care. I'm gonna kill you."
I it's been too many days. I don't remember exactly what Lucifer said, but I swear he said something along the lines that, like, he actually recognizes that this, like, Gedoin is not necessarily, I think he calls him like, kind of calls him like stupid. Like, obviously he's like a scientist, but he's also kind of like, you're not competent. Like, you're
incompetent, maybe, might be what he said.
I forget what it was. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, obviously you're like, you have some intelligence to do your science, your mad science, but like, also you're just kind of an idiot otherwise. And like, I don't like you, so you're dead.
Yeah. And again, this is still like confusing to me. And they end the scene off by having everyone sort of recite like the Illuminati motto. And it's basically like, the goal of the Illuminati is to end both humans and demons and create a world where there will never be fighting again, because humans and demons won't exist. But that, I don't understand how that works.
Yeah. It's like, if we're all the same, then there will be no more conflict.
So. Yeah, I guess.
Now, how do they actually manifest that? We know there's this plan where they're going to like try to mix the human world with like Gehenna, which is the demon world, but it's just kind of like, what are the actual realities of this?
Yeah, like, what do they, are they killing humans and demons or what? Like, we don't know.
Yeah, like, what's the logistics of this?
So we cut back to the school and we get a little bit of a lighthearted scene here where everyone's back in the classroom and Rin enters and he's dressed up and doing basically a Renzo cosplay. and he's acting like Renzo, and he's just like, hey guys, blah 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 blah, and everybody, nobody like falls for it. They're all like, what are you doing, Ren, idiot? And he's like, oh, I'm just trying to cheer you up because all this bad stuff that happened.
And this part is a bit silly. I mean, more than a bit silly. But Rin actually kind of like beats himself up about this because he promised that he'd bring Renzo back, and he like saw it as like a failure on his part. Like, I made a promise and I couldn't keep it, and so he's beating himself up and he's trying to like, I guess, lighten his own mood. But yeah, then the real Renzo also shows up.
Yeah, he just walks in right after. He's like, hey, everybody, and everybody's just shocked.
I wonder what sorts of things Renzo says in Japanese, like, because his way of speaking, he kind of does this, but I think they exaggerated it even more in this scene, where he does like, what's up in the hize, like no one, yeah. Like, what do you even call that type of talk? Like, was that ever in vogue? And, you know, it's, I don't know what you even call it, but I'm just curious, like, what they translated it from to get like this sort of manner of speaking.
Yeah, it must be some kind of Japanese slang or something, right?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily like, it's not cool, and it's not even, I don't even know what you call it. It's like try hard, maybe.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, that's what he talks. And I actually thought it was pretty fun when Yukio comes in, and we learned shortly after that, like, he's not tricked by it, but he even is just like giving roll call, and he's like, Rin. Well, Rin's not here, and he real calls everyone else. He calls Shima. Both of them say hi. And then he's like, all right. The part that was, I think, the most amusing, where he's like, all right, now both Shimas, can you please recite something, something? So he acknowledges that there's two of them, but he's just playing along. He later says that he's like, I thought I was being, like, you know, tested. Like, you were tricking me or something. So I just kind of leaned into it.
Yeah. I like that, too.
Like he wasn't tricked. He's just like, so in his mind, this is just a small moment, but in his mind, he's just like, I don't know what these kids are doing, but I'm just going to play along. All right, both Shimas, please recite.
Yeah. Are they trying to get, like, are they trying to, like, make, like, do a prank on me almost to a certain extent? And he's like, I mean, he said test specifically. So he thought, like, maybe he thought they were testing him to see if he'd notice. And he's just playing along. Yeah. That was kind of nice. And then there's, like, a bit of, like, Renzo being Renzo, just being like so over the top and kind of like annoying to a certain extent that he starts getting on everyone's nerves, and, you know, and everybody's getting mad at him. I like there's a moment when
Suguro lifts him up by the collar for a bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then Izumo, she like whips out her, like, cause she gets mad. She's like, so you didn't intend to kill my, you know, familiars and stuff. Like, what's with you? And then she like whips out a spell and she says, dispel scumbag at him, which I thought was pretty funny. And then at some point, like, because of all the mayhem, Rin gets his clothes like burnt or no, Rin gets really mad in his blue flames, and he ends up burning Renzo's clothes off. So Renzo's like laying in the classroom naked.
It's kind of a joke. I mean, it is a joke.
Yeah.
One of the things Rin has been working on is like his flame control. And he's trying to burn off Renzo's clothes. I think he kind of mentions that he like wasn't trying to burn off the underwear, but he accidentally did also. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a joke that he's burning off Renzo's clothes, but he's like, whoops, I accidentally burned off all of it. I wasn't planning on that. And I guess, yes, Rin is still having some issues with his flame control, although it's better than it was.
Yeah, the girls are like, oh my gosh, and got to close their eyes and everything.
Yep.
Before everything gets too crazy, Lewin Light shows up. That guy from the Illuminati, the head of the Illuminati people. And that's when we come to the commercial break.
And they basically say, we kind of knew this already, but they basically say that he is more or less like the second in command
of, yes,
like the whole like Exorcist Society, because that other guy, Archangel or whatever the other guy's name is sort of like the top dog, and he's kind of like the right hand man. So
yeah, he's super powerful. Everybody there is like impressed by him in these next scenes.
He's an interesting design for being,
oh yeah, so let's talk about
powerful exorcist, like guy with like, you know, like fluffy hair that covers his eyes and like
a permanently hat. I was paying attention to this. He never shows his eyes in the whole episode. They're hidden the whole time.
Yep. Yep. And he's got the little fisher hat, like he's going out fishing or something. Yeah. I don't know what you call that, the little brimmed hat. And apparently he has dandruff too. That's his thing.
Yeah. So when we come back, they all kind of get they all get teleported into Mephisto's office by Mephisto. That's where he introduces Lewin Light is there. They call him Lightning, I guess, for short. That's where it's explained that Renzo, he's actually kind of spying for both sides. This is part of Mephisto's plan, but everyone is also very skeptical. Like, and I mean, even the audience, the viewers are like, well, it's not made perfectly clear whose side he's on. We get a little bit more of that later.
He's like a double agent. Because the Illuminati want him to spy on the,
well, yes,
on the kids, and then the kids or the exorcists want him to spy on the Illuminati, and so he's kind of like spying on both of them, and you know he has allegiance to one or the other, maybe.
Well, that's the thing, I think, is what the episode kind of leaves you with, which is kind of tipping to the end, but what the episode is leaving you with is this idea that he doesn't have a side, that right. He's just going with the flow. He's doing both sides' biddings at this point, and he even kind of says to a certain point, like, he's saying, like, I'm just kind of doing me. I think maybe this might be going a little into the next episode, but, like, that's basically the gist of it, is that he's not 100% on anybody's side right now. So,
right.
Anyway, and this is the scene where everybody's like, well, what do we do? Do we trust Renzo or not? And then Renzo just kind of gets mad, and he's like, I trust Renzo. Who I don't trust is Mephisto. And in fact, everybody goes against Mephisto. They all get really mad at him.
I actually really appreciate this because, like,
oh, me too.
Because, you know, me, you, and Crocodile have been saying for the last two seasons, like, what the heck is up with Mephisto? And he's just like this kind of wild card. You know, he's a high ranking exorcist, but he is a demon. And like, how did he even get into that position? I don't know. And like, he kind of does what he wants. What's his plan? I don't know. And I'm kind of glad that the people in the show, the characters in the show, are actually like calling him out on this. And like, why should we trust you?
Well, what's great about this scene is that Mephisto kind of like at first kind of like takes it in shy. That's like everybody's mad at him. Like he would. He's just like, it's like a joke to him, right, or whatever. But they really get in his face. It's particularly Ren that like, gets right up in Mephisto's face about like, you can't use us like this. And this is when Mephisto really shows his dark side. I love this part of this episode where he basically is just like, look, there ain't nothing you can do. You're all pawns to me. I'm playing you like chess pieces. I picked all of you specifically because you play different parts in my plan. I don't have to tell you my plan. And in fact, if you don't like my plan, do something about it because you can't. And then he just throws Ren across the room into a wall and then gives this evil look. And he's just like, that's how it is. You're stuck. Yeah. You got to deal with what I want because I'm me and you can't touch me. And he is like, super powerful in this moment, and you really understand that, yeah, he is a demon. He is a demon. He wants to defeat Lucifer. That much is clear. But he's basically, this is his evil side coming out. He's just like, I'm a freaking powerful demon. There ain't nothing you can do to stop me. I love that.
I forget if it was earlier in this season or at the end of season two, maybe the very end of season two, there was actually a similar moment when like Shura kind of does the same thing where she's kind of like, I don't know what you're up to, but, you know, I got my eye on you sort of thing. And, you know, he kind of smirked back at her, basically saying, like, you know, he didn't say this outright, but kind of like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
So she also had that sort of conversation with her.
Yeah, he even says, I mean, straight up verbatim in this moment says, you are all worthless people. Like, he says that to them. He's like, you're worthless. You're nothing to me. You're just pawns. Like, uses the word worthless to their face. So, again, I like this aspect of Mephisto. It is fun that he's, like, goofy and playful, but, like, he reminds you in this moment that he is a powerful demon.
And I forget who said it exactly, but it's kind of... I think he said it himself also, but I know other people have mentioned this too. It's pretty clear that, like, his priority is Ren. Like, he's kind of building up Ren as some sort of tool or weapon for his plan, whatever it is. We know it might have something to do with taking on Lucifer, but beyond that, we're not sure. So he just kind of says, he even says, like, there's a part in the episode when it does like this sort of like Octobox where it's kind of highlighting each of the characters, and he says, like, and you and you and you and especially you, when he mentions Ren.
Yeah,
like, obviously Ren is like the key here. He's the main character. So yeah, he pretty much says to their face that, like, you know, like you said, you're all part of my, you're all just tools for my plan, and what are you going to do about it?
So everyone then comes back to their, after they kind of get this earful from him, and they kind of come to terms with the fact there's nothing they can do. They go, well, what about Renzo? Do we trust them? And everyone just sort of in semi politely, but also a bit reluctantly kind of goes, well, I guess I trust Renzo. You know, they kind of, I think they're putting on a face here, because in the next episode, they kind of recant this a little bit. But in this moment, they're like, we trust Renzo. And they're like, well, okay, cool.
I think some of them do. But I remember Suguro said something like, I only said that to save his ass.
Well, that's in the next episode. But yes.
Sorry, I get the episode of blurring
together. Yeah, these kind of run together, but you're right. But yeah, that's the part where I'm talking about, where like in the next episode at the beginning, they kind of like, that's when they're walking out and they're like, do you really trust them? And they're like, no, I don't know. But the main thing here, though, is that at the end of this episode, as they're walking out, Renzo walks up to Yukio, and Yukio's like, or Renzo's like, okay, well, you know what? You know, now you know the situation and everything. Oh, and by the way, Lucifer told me he has a message he wants me to deliver to you. And this shocks Yukio, like, to the point where Yukio is like trembling in fear. And that's when the episode ends. So let's go right into the final episode of this season. Episode 12, Hidden True Feelings. So we pick up right where we left off. Renzo is delivering the message from Lucifer. And we see this sort of like flashback to when they were captured in those cells back at the laboratory.
Gedewin's lab, yeah.
Yeah, Gedewin's lab. And what we didn't see before is how Yukio got out. Turns out that right before he left, Lucifer appeared to him, and he's like, gets up real close into his face, but he does it because he wants to look into his eyes. And he's like, oh yeah, Gedewin's right. You do have the blue eyes. Or no, wait, not Gedewin, the Toto. It's like, Toto was right. You do have the blue in your eyes. And it's like, what does he say? It's like, if you want something, I can give it to you.
I think it is power. Like this is a little bit trite to a sense, where it's just like, if you want this power, come find me. And
yeah.
I think later in the episode, Yukio is kind of like, you know, Yukio starts kind of, he's been doing this kind of slowly over the last couple of seasons, but like he's thinking to himself, and he's like, he sees a flashback with his dad, and there's like, you want to be strong enough to protect your brother, right? And then I think Yukio even says to himself, like, I do want power, I need to be stronger, type of thing. And so we've seen this before, but in other shows and media. So it's got its own little twist on it, but yeah, he has this like inferiority complex, despite being, you know, otherwise
super competent.
He's a competent character, but he always feels inferior. And that's kind of been his undoing as a, you know, as a character. And like we said at the start of this episode of this podcast, the teams like this is basically going to be, we're rolling into what the next season is going to be about, is this.
Yeah.
And apparently he throws himself off a building.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but yeah, okay.
That was in the promo.
In the promo for the next season. Yeah, yeah. I don't remember that from the promo.
Assuming he throws himself off a building.
Probably. I don't know. We'll see. So basically he now has to struggle with this idea that Lucifer can solve his problem. So we don't know what the deal is. We get the scene, like I said, where everybody's leaving and they're kind of talking amongst themselves with Renzo not around. And they're like, this is the part where they're like, nobody really trusts Renzo. They're like, well, I'm not so sure. I'm not sure, you know, and everybody's kind of like, we've got to be careful, that kind of thing. And that's when Renzo's kind of like comes up to them and he's just like explaining that he's just happy being a spy and he likes playing everyone. This is like the thing that he's been missing in his life. This is his, like, this is the moment where he kind of lays his cards on the table and he's like, I'm not really playing. I'm not really on your side. I'm not really on the Illuminati side. I just like playing both sides. I like being a spy. And this is being a spy makes me happy. I think he's telling this to Ren.
He has serious attachment issues.
Something. Yeah. That's when we get the commercial break. When we come back, Yukio visits Shura in the hospital. She's recovering.
I don't even remember why she's in the hospital.
I don't either. I know she got attacked, but I don't remember the details. It's been too many weeks, but Yeah.
I blame the marathons.
Yes. Anyway, she does tell him, though. She gives him some advice, and she's like, look, you know, if you ever need to tell someone something, I can tell something's on your mind, Yukio. You just need to get it out. Talk to somebody. Tell them what your issue is. It'll make you feel better. So she leaves him with that, and he struggles with that. He thinks about it. And then, for funsies, we go to the spa. Mephisto decided to give everyone tickets to a big spa because they did such a good job.
We can't trust you, Mephisto, but we'll take those tickets.
Yeah. This is Mephisto kind of like, he's very two-faced, and this is him back being a nice guy again. And the spa is like, I was expecting like a hot spring, but it's not that. It's like a swimming, like but a...
There was like an amusement park. Yeah, it looked like a big like indoor pool, right? With the water slide and whatnot. Almost like a gym pool, only bigger. Like a water park almost. But there was some chatter in the thread that I guess in the manga it was just a hot spring. Oh. And it's sort of like been readjusted for the anime. And someone in the thread mentioned that sort of makes sense because it does seem sort of weird that like the boys and the girls seem to be in like different spots, even though it's all just one big pool. Like,
that is true.
Why are they on like separate corners of the room? And it's like, oh, if this was the hot spring, they'd have like the separate baths, but that doesn't work. So it's like, I guess that sort of makes sense that it does feel like this sort of retrofitted anime thing. Apparently the manga is also a little bit more stereotypical where the boys are trying to spy on the girls. And So rather than them being the spy, rather than doing the super stereotypical, like let's peek on them. It seems like they changed it to like, we want to slide down the water slide with the girls, which feels a little bit more like playful and appropriate, but you know, something you'd think a high school guy would want to do also. It's like, it's less, you know, voyeuristic than just like, let's peek on them without their consent. Right. So.
Yeah, it's less tropey. I am surprised to learn that that's different, but you're right. Like the sliding down the slide is the analog of them peeking, right? It's like less offensive version of that. But before they even get to do that, suddenly these three wise monkey demons show up and there's just wacky hijinks because they make you say or do things that your heart desires or something.
So it was actually before they made this reveal that these monkeys have this ability, Rin was going on about like, I want to go down the slide with Shiemi. Shiemi's mine. You can have the other two girls. And I'm like, oh, I guess he's being pretty forthright about, you know, his feelings for her. And it turns out, oh, well, that's because he was sort of being forced to, you know, someone in the thread, I think it was actually Crocodile, mentioned like, oh, I thought they were just being honest. And like, well, they were kind of being honest, maybe against their will, but kind of shows that Rin, you know, he does have feelings for Shiemi in a sense that he wants to go down the slide with her. He's like, who cares about Chira and who cares about Izumo? I want to go down the slide with Shiemi.
The problem with this scene that I had, though, is that they didn't do it to the girls.
Yeah.
Only the guys get affected. And I'm like, that's lame. I wanted to see what the girls' like inhibitions are. That would have been fun. But anyway. So, yeah, that's just like, it's just like a lighthearted little moment here to just kind of wrap things up for fun.
Yeah, we had a bunch of serious stuff, and this is kind of a bit more tropey, but I'm glad they toned it down, that it wasn't just the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, it wasn't as pervy.
Yeah, and it was actually Yukio, of course, he doesn't care about any of that. He's just like, oh no, if I have to tell the truth, I'm gonna let everyone know about my own insecurities about myself. So that's what he was worried about. He didn't care about the girls.
So Yukio actually runs away from this moment because he's afraid his like secret will get out as well. So he runs away. And I think Mephisto's nearby or something watching them. And he's just like kind of scheming. And he even says like, this story is to be continued, which was kind of like fourth wall breaking to a certain extent. And there's like a moment, I think, right before or after they go to the spa where he like has a moment with Rin and Yukio is like contemplating maybe telling Rin what's going on. But then at the last moment, he hesitates and he just leaves and kind of like puts a smile on his face. And he's like, no, everything's fine. I'll talk to you later. I won't need dinner tonight. I got to work late or something. He leaves, but he's like keeping it bottled inside. And then the final shot of the season shows Yukio kind of standing kind of near a wall or something. And he's just talking aloud to himself. And he's just like so jealous of Rin and how Rin has everything like going so well for him and how Rin is like so outwardly and he's not. And he's just so jealous of Rin. And he says something like, I want to be more powerful than Rin is what he says. Like he wants the demon powers now.
Yep.
And that's where we leave off. So, like you said, I think the next season is going to be exploring potentially what is going to be happen with Yukio here.
Yeah. So we have the the bigger storyline of like the Illuminati who have sort of become, you know, the villains of the show. You know, they were really only introduced in this season, but now they're the antagonist here. Their whole goal. And then, this last season three was really about Renzo and Izumo. Like those two characters got a bunch of spotlight. And now I guess season four, we're going to go more into Yukio. Obviously he's been around since the beginning, but that seems like this is his season.
I guess you could argue that the Illuminati have been there all along. When you think about those two characters, like Renzo and the puppet guy have been around. Maybe that was the plan all along.
And in season two, when Toto was introduced, we didn't know he was part of the Illuminati until season three. Right. So,
That's where we're going next. We're going to go. It's some kind of snow place. We're going to go something in the snow. I don't know. That's all we know.
Yep.
So look forward to that. That will be coming this weekend.
I do have one more thing to say, unfortunately. Sure. The animation in these last two episodes, it kind of felt like they ran out of steam.
I agree.
It almost felt like they thought like, okay, not that the animation was necessarily like stellar. It had some good moments, especially early in the season. But like, I felt like episode 10 and 11 before this week were just like fine. And then these last two episodes, especially episode 12, just like really, it was honestly pretty bad.
If you told me they reanimated the spa scene in a rush to change it, I would believe you. I don't know if they did that, but it kind of looks like they did, like quality wise, because that was kind of some of the worst.
A lot of off model faces, a lot of, you know, this really stoic motion, like characters just kind of like standing still and then like rotating and panning of the camera. It was pretty bad.
Yeah,
I hope season four is better.
Yeah, I don't think we will know yet. But I mean, considering that this season started out stronger, I think there's a possibility it'll get better. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's finish off this episode by talking about the last episode on the block, the most important episode of the night, of course, One Piece. One Piece episode 750, A Desperate Situation. Luffy fights a battle in extreme heat. Finally here at the final battle to claim the One Piece from Bill. So Bill makes Desire angry and cry and says dreams are lame, which is exactly what the antithesis of Luffy would do, wouldn't it? Oh boy. I mean, I'm going to go through these notes real quick, but like this was awful. Like, this is just horrible.
Yeah.
All I have in my notes is that Luffy beats Bill. I don't even know how. He just uses one of his moves and just beats Bill immediately. I know Bill gets big and, like, swallows a bunch of stuff and becomes giant, but whatever. He gets beat. He's lame.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Bill eats a bunch of the charcoal stuff or whatever it is. He becomes, like, a big, like, lava man. Yeah. I remember... Bartolomeo does like a barrier. Luffy, I think, punches him. Bill kind of like flies towards like the island, which has become a volcano. And he's not necessarily like defeated at that point. I mean, he practically is, but then like the island is falling apart now because of all of this.
It's like, yeah, it's like sinking.
And then they just kind of like, they get into the boats and go away. Like, oh, I guess Bill just sank to the bottom of the ocean with the island. And he's got a devil fruit, so he can't swim. So
no. And like, I posted in the thread, it's like, how convenient that this filler island just is erased from existence. But before that happens, we do see the film Gold character show up, and he's like, you were worthless to Master Tesoro, which is, of course, the villain of film Gold. And we see like him even, he's like a voice by Keith Silverstein, and he's like, yeah, oh.
He sounded like exactly like, well, not exactly, but like Hisoka and all his other characters.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's that, yeah, that just voice. That evil voice he uses. Yeah, it was that. Why does it say powers up? I don't know. One of my comments here, it says Luffy beats Bill. Bill is afraid of the film Gold villain Tesoro. And then I wrote powers up.
I think powers up is when he starts like just chowing down and he becomes
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, because there's, we kind of skip to the end, but like Barto saves Desire from falling. Bill turns into silver, becomes like a silver man for a moment. And then, yeah, Luffy uses Gum Gum Grizzly, get Magnum to defeat him. Then they leave. And then everyone just leaves, and we get the movie tease with Tesoro. That's when we get the Tesoro movie tease. Okay. Yeah, and that's it. Then they left. Thank God. I haven't anything else to say about this. This is one of the worst fillers in One Piece, I think.
Yeah. And I even wondered, like, sometimes, not always, sometimes you get those weird filler episodes with, like, why do they animate this well? And nope, not here. None of these episodes look good.
Like, this looked worse than the Dressrosa stuff. I mean, it's just...
Which doesn't necessarily look good.
No.
I mean, actually, Dressrosa, for the most part, does not look good. There might have been, like, one or two decent animated episodes in that whole thing.
Well, even, like, normal One Piece, like Dressrosa or... you know, stuff that we don't think looks particularly good. They still have the manga panels to kind of give them guidance on how to make certain shots look good. But when they're filler, it's just, they don't have anything to go on. So they're just, it's hopeless.
Yeah.
Unless you get like a super talented animator, which they can do. And that has happened. And especially in the most recent One Piece, they've had some of the most amazing filler, not really filler, but they had like that, One Piece, fan letter thing, which was like, insane. But now here it's just like, we've got to do a promo for the movie. Buy time. Oh, this reminds me of the thing I was wanting to talk about with One Piece. They have announced, you know, remember they're making the One Piece?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was revealed that the One Piece. Oh, no, wait. Oh, two things. I've got two things to talk about. First, the One Piece. They've given a little bit more information about like what the arcs and what the pacing of the One Piece is going to be. And they say it's going to be pretty fast, kind of like the live action, where things aren't going to be as drawn out. Like they said that like they're condensing certain arcs that were like 54 episodes down to like 24 episodes and stuff like that. They kind of came out with these numbers explaining how it's going to be condensed, which I thought was pretty interesting. But the other piece of news is that when One Piece anime returns, because it's not now gone on a brief hiatus. But when it returns, it will no longer be an endless runner. They're going to do seasons. So they're completely changing the way they're doing the One Piece anime.
I mean, One Piece was sort of like, it felt like the last bastion of, you know, the endless runners.
Yeah.
Like every other show does, you know, seasons now. And this is probably a smart move. I mean, not probably. I would say it is a smart move overall. Like just imagine if you were an animator in Japan. And like, obviously it's a very, very, I'm not an expert on this, but it seems like kind of a thankless job, very, very time consuming, hectic, busy work schedule type job. And it's just kind of like, if One Piece being like this last type of show, this kind of like era of a, you know, from an older, like 20 years ago, this endless runner, get a new episode out every week, no matter what, like eventually that's got to like drain on moral.
Oh my gosh.
And all of that, where it's like, how come all these other animators at all these other studios can work on like shows in like these sort of like season schedules and we can't? And I imagine eventually it's just going to catch up to you. It's like, I feel like you would have to eventually just kind of shift it to how every other show is being done now. Like, how long could you have kept it just forever long running when no other show is doing that?
So this is from Polygon, of which this story was carried on a bunch of outlets, but I'll just read what Polygon has here very briefly. It says, now the last bastion of the old school way of producing anime has embraced the inevitable progress. Starting in 2026, after a 3-month break, Toei Animation will only produce 26 One Piece anime episodes per year, divided into 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Moreover, each episode will adapt no less than 1 chapter of the manga, meaning no more padding. Now,
a little bit,
maybe. I will say that one of the things I love about Dr. Stone is they've consistently kept the 2 chapter per episode minimum that has made that show always have really great pacing. If they're only going to do no less than 1 chapter, that's they could do better. I think they should do two episode if they really want to be great. But I do understand the worry of catching up. So. All right. So that big news from One Piece. So that'll be a major change coming 2026 that, of course, won't affect Toonami for years if we keep it that long.
Hey,
so.
if they're only showing 20-something episodes a year and we're showing 40-something episodes a year, eventually we'll catch up.
Yeah, that's true, eventually. But see, there's a problem. Wano is on the horizon, and it is the longest One Piece arc ever. Like, well, what's by a wide margin.
Toonami is only like 400 episodes behind, so you know, we'll catch up in literally, you know, if we have like a plus 15, I don't know, I'm guessing, you know, like advantage every year, it'll only take us 30 years.
Exactly. All right. Well, before we sign out, do we want to talk about flavor alerts?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Let's take a look real quick. I know we've had a long episode, but, you know, we have the end of Daima. Let me scroll up here.
One thing we did talk about, we wanted to decide about whether we were going to include the Goma fight in the category. What do you think?
Oh, in best fight?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's worth a nomination. I think we held off on it because we didn't know how to frame it.
Yeah, I will say that I was a little let down by the fight from a like emotional standpoint, but I think I was overwhelmed with positivity by the actual production values of the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about it before how like the best fights in shows have like an emotional or personal or character stake. Or this one, not so much. No. Like Goma, we talked about how Goma wasn't that interesting, and also like the fact that his power was just like this eyeball, and it's just it diluted it a bit. But I think it's, you know, obviously the most significant fight in that show is worth a nomination.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and add it. It definitely looked great. And as far as Goma's concerned, like, I don't like his, like, I didn't find his final form entertaining, but like as a character, as a villain, he's that goofball type villain that I like, the overconfident little guy. I do like that part of his character. He is fun when he's like that.
I think he's worth nominating for best villain, even if he's, even though we've just talked about, you know, how he's maybe not a very good Dragon Ball villain. I think just of the villains we've had this year, he is one of them. So
he was entertaining when he was on screen. Again, until he turned into a giant beast that was unbeatable. Like everything up to that point, he was always fun every time he was on screen, usually because he was just freaking out. But it was always fun to watch, I think.
Worst character, Bill.
Oh my god, thank you very much. That is exactly right.
Who is Avalon? I don't even remember.
Avalon, I think, is the train guy.
Oh yeah, okay. So we have two of these filler characters.
Yeah, Bill beats out Avalon, I think. I mean, Avalon's pretty bad, though, but...
Yeah.
We'll see. Here's the thing. Before we move on, we are still quite low on worst moments this year. What are we saying?
Oh, over here. Okay.
Would we have anything here we can add? I mean, there's 3 One Pieces, a Lazarus, and a Blue Exorcist in this list, and nothing else.
Is there any moment in Bleach that's just been really bad?
Like worst moment.
Off the top of my head, I don't think so. Like, no. it's not like every moment in Bleach has been great, but there hasn't been something that's so obviously like that's bad. And same with Daima. Like, was there any single like spot at Daima that just felt like it was just didn't work?
Like nothing offensive that I can think of, nothing where I was like put off. I don't think so. I mean, the worst thing that happened in Daima that I can think of is like a bunch of like potty humor from Goku, but I was like just fart jokes. Yeah. I'm like, whatever. That's not worst. Yeah, I don't know.
I was thinking of putting Super Saiyan 4 Goku in the best power, but also it's just like, it's just stronger Goku.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
We already have Mephisto on best villain. That's good. Okay. I really like him. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We just haven't had many worst moments. We need somebody. When we lost...
When we lost Naruto.
Well, that's one thing. I was going to say, when we lost Greg Zeno on the podcast, we kind of lost that vibe of like somebody here who like really pull out things that they hate. And I'm not very good at that. So I can't think of things. He was always the pessimist.
Yeah.
We'll have to probably ask some people when we get closer to the end of the year, like,
yeah, if they have any nominations
for worst moments, because we're low. Anybody have, I will tell you what, I wish there was a worst character design, but there isn't. And I don't think there was any bests here this week, at least.
Anyone else in Bleach for best character design? I kind of like GG and I kind of like the monotone girl, but I don't know if they're either of them are best.
Yeah, let me look at them real quick. Okay, kind of refresh my memory.
I mean, Gigi's design, like her clothes aren't really that interesting, but
the thing is that Gigi, like, it's not like it looks
her
fine.
Face and her hair, yeah.
It's her face mostly that I like. She has this weird expression she makes. She's got creepy eyes, but it's also like she is like to me the most stereotypical Bleach looking character. And I'm not trying to be mean, but I just, that's what I, when I look at her, I'm like, it's kind of like part Orihime, part Rukia, kind of mixed together a little bit. Just that look.
Yeah.
Her outfit's just sort of whatever. Yeah, I don't know. What? Who was the other one?
The monotone gluttony girl.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of like her hat. I guess they all have the same hat.
No, gluttony girl's got a different hat.
Well,
oh no, you're right. No, it is the same. It is the same. My bad.
It's the same hat, except for Gigi's hat is smaller for some reason, and the pink hair girl's hat is big for some reason. But it's like they all have the same sort of hat, same type of hat. I didn't even realize that until now. I think it.
You know what? I'm gonna let's go ahead and add the glutton girl. I think she's kind of cool looking, and she's got like these weird like leg wrappings. She's got the weird mouth thing she does.
Yeah, it kind of talks out of this. She kind of like talks out of the side of her mouth, and then like her mouth like literally grows out of the side of her mouth or the side of her face.
Yeah, let's do that.
I think that's good. Like we just had a season ending of Blue Exorcist, but I don't know if any part of those two episodes, like we said the last week, it almost felt like episode 10 felt like the end of the season in terms of like stakes of the season. And obviously we're rolling into the next one, so there's still stuff going on. But I don't think, like, these two episodes, there's a little bit of buildup with Renzo and whatnot. And Yukio,
what about Renzo as a best character male? You think he's earned that, or do you think he's just sort of like, whatever? Okay, you don't sound strong about it, so let's
not. He's definitely more interesting now than he was. He was kind of a nobody. And now he's got like a little bit of stakes to him. We don't have any. Okay, so out of best characters, we have one Blue Exorcist character, and it's Izumo, which makes sense. This is kind of like her season.
Right.
Any other Blue Exorcist character would probably be Renzo, right? This season. So.
I mean, Yukio has a lot going on, but I don't know if it feels like.
I feel like we have to hold off until next season.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good enough reason for me right there. I think the Renzo was like the Renzo for me, at least Renzo was the conversation piece of this arc. Insofar as like, what's going on with this guy? Which side is he on? And then the way they kind of end it with like, he's not on anyone's side is like weird.
Yeah. I'd say we can nominate him.
Okay.
at least as a talking point. We might cut him off when we actually.
Yeah, exactly. I think he might not last, but we might change our mind later once we, you know, get to see more of him. I don't know. Okay. All right, cool. That's pretty good. Biggest disappointment, Bill did not become King of the Pirates. Actually, I joke, but like, it was never his like ambition. He even said as much.
He's just like, I want riches, and
that's it. He's like lame. Like,
people brought me bounties.
Yeah,
like he basically like, I don't know, I probably not worth thinking about, but he like people for some reason collected bounties on his behalf.
He's such a great leader, I guess. He's supposed to be charismatic, but he doesn't come across that way. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
No problem.
All right. And we'll see you guys next week for episode 449. And until then, later.
Mash is back.
Later.